On. This is great.
Oh goodness. Yeah. So I'll tell you, I really kind of stuck my foot in it. Trying to get my headphones going here.
Take your time, no hurry. Oh, the whole
So
world is
I
crazy right now. It's just, I mean, even the
even the
weather is
weather.
just, oh, go ahead.
Well, you know, I've been doing this Vegas investigation for a while now, and I started to get I was working on some stuff in the background. I put out videos and I put some stuff out there, and but some of the really good stuff I haven't been talking much about, partly because, you know, I don't want people to know what I don't want the wrong people. Basically, I'm looking into some major screw-ups by the FBI and the ATF leading up to the Vegas shooting. And so I didn't really want to broadcast yet what I was working on. But one of the so there's two things, two big things that I had really discovered, and I did talk about in previous videos. One was that on September 19th, Stephen Paddock flew from Las Vegas. He took an American Airlines flight that I tracked. He flew from Vegas to Phoenix, Arizona. I got his rental car records. I got the rental car receipt that showed me everything, including the exact time that he picked it up and the time that he dropped it off and the number of miles that he drove. So I started looking, and he flew in on the 19th and then was doing something within 90 miles of Phoenix for about 3 hours, and then he immediately drove back to Las Vegas. And at that point, he was not checked into the Mandalay Bay Hotel. He was checked into the Ogden Hotel. So, based on the information that I had, I believed that, and I said this back in October, I published a video predicting that, or saying that I believe that Stephen Paddock had flown in, gotten some ammunition, some guns, possibly explosives, and taken it back to Las Vegas. And that has been validated just here this last week. Turns out I was right. Some of the unsealed documents that a judge ordered the LVMPD to release said exactly that. It says that on September 19th, Stephen Paddock went and visited Doug Hague, who is the works for these different. Right now, he works for Honeywell, but he's lifelong employee of different military contractor companies. But he also runs a side business as a manufacturing and selling ammunition. He does not, you don't normally have to have a license in Arizona to sell stuff or to own certain ammunition, including tracer ammo, but you do have to have a license to manufacture certain kinds of ammunition, including this incendiary stuff that he was selling to Stephen Paddock. So these documents that were released showed that Paddock did go in. He purchased some stuff, went to the guy's house. He flew into Mesa, rented a car, drove over there to Mesa to the guy's house. Anyway, now that guy, Doug Hague, has been arrested and charged with a couple things. One, conspiracy, but also with illegal weapon sales, ammunition sales. So that told me that a lot of the stuff that I had previously had a good feeling about, that I was probably on the right trail. So I went back and picked up that same trail. And this goes along with a lot of other stuff that I had previously learned. I got hold of Stephen Paddock's vehicle records, including all of the VIN numbers for all the cars and trucks that he has owned basically since 1997. And I started tracking the ownership records on these VIN numbers. And I had found that while he was still living in Reno, one of his vehicles, a Nissan, it was a 2007 Nissan Xterra, that car was the title had a second name added to it. and the guy's name was Adam Kachke. And Kachke lived 7 hours away in the town of Caliente, Nevada. And I thought, well, that's strange, because why would he co-own a vehicle with a guy who lives across the state?
That's weird.
And so they shared this ownership of this vehicle for a long time. And then finally Paddock just sold it over to him, put it in his name. And then Paddock took a second vehicle and sold it to someone else in the town next to Caliente, in this little place called Panaca. Well, at first things didn't click, but when I went back and looked at it, what I realized was that this guy Adam Kachke had gone to prison. He owned a pharmacy in Caliente, and it was the only pharmacy providing medicine to the local hospital, the prescriptions. Well, this hospital had this huge scandal with drugs, prescription drugs being peddled out. People that worked there were involved in basically a prescription drug running scheme. And one of those guys that was involved in this went nuts and went to Panaca and filled a car full of explosives and blew it up. And it was such a huge explosion that it completely obliterated a house. That house just happened to be the next door house of Adam Kachke's brother. So there's this connection going on. Kachke ended up going to prison for defrauding the Medicaid out of millions of dollars. He was doing illegal ketamine drug sales out of this pharmacy. And Stephen Paddock co-owned a vehicle with this guy. Well, then I made the connection that what I did was I found where that guy, Adam Kachke, who he transferred the title to, and it was to his pharmacy manager, who was a woman who actually, she was a pharmacy tech, but she didn't have the qualifications to be an actual pharmacy manager. Anyway, he transferred that car to her, and that's when I realized that that other car that Stephen Paddock had transferred to the person in Panaca, it was her. So I've got Stephen Paddock now connected to these ketamine, an illegal ketamine drug operation. Both the pharmacy owner and the pharmacy manager ended up being sent to prison for it. So I really start looking at this. I had somebody who works at the rental car section there at the Phoenix airport. And they fed me some screenshots of Paddock's rental car records, and I started tracking it, and I saw over the years how he was flying into Phoenix, renting a car, and doing the same thing over and over again. And so what I realized is that Paddock had some kind of operation going on. Well, long story short, Mark, is that Stephen Paddock was involved in basically something similar to the ATF's Fast and Furious operation, where what they were doing was they were moving guns were being sold, being purchased illegally by a straw buyer. This guy named Acosta was buying this. He was connected to Mexican drug cartels. He was taking these guns, with the full knowledge of the ATF and the full knowledge of the DEA and the full knowledge of the FBI. And he was taking these and taking them across the border into Mexico, where they were being sold to Mexican drug cartels, Sinaloa Mexican drug cartel. Well, eventually some of those guns ended up being used by the drug lords, cartel members. They killed some Border Patrol agents. It was a big debacle. Well, the big scandal of it was that at the time, these different agencies, the ATF did not know that this Acosta guy, who was a true criminal, They did not know that he was secretly working for the FBI as a straw purchaser. Nor did they know that two of the cartel members that Acosta was transferring the guns to, they were also informants for the FBI. So what ended up happening, and this is why the whole operation got shut down by the U.S. Congress, it's because it turned out that you had one U.S. law enforcement agency working against another law enforcement agency, and they were so screwed up with it that they lost hundreds and hundreds of guns that they never could track down. It was a big mess. But I got tracking through this Operation Fast and Furious the routes that this guy was taking, that Acosta was taking, and Stephen Paddock's rental car records match up very close. It looks very much like Stephen Paddock was working as a courier for either the ketamine, because there's a massive amount of prescription drugs, mostly synthetic drugs, being manufactured in Mexico that are brought in through the border into border towns like Lukeville, Arizona, and then, you know, being sold and distributed, but also the guns. So the fact that we now have actual court documents, warrants, and information confirming that Stephen Paddock is going into Phoenix and getting some of this stuff and taking it back to Vegas, and this guy was an informant. At this point, I'm sure that this guy was working somehow, in some way, don't have it nailed down, he was doing something, and the FBI is scrambling to cover up everything about this. And that's why you've got media agencies suing the Vegas PD and suing to get access,
man,
to any information, because they're not putting anything out. They're not. And by this point, if this guy was a lone gunman and it's open and shut, he's just a weirdo that snapped and that's it. At this point, 4 months after the event, they would have released stuff in any other case. But this, they're resisting. They're not putting anything out. So media outlets have sued. They've been winning. And so they're having to put more and more documents out. And as it comes out, it keeps showing there's something here. So I got concerned when I realized this and I started talking about this. I put out a video saying, I suspect that the FBI, if what I'm saying is true, they're going to target me and they're going to try and shut me up.
Yeah.
The very next day, I got this bizarre phone call from a German national who talked to me, trying to get me to personally transport. She wanted me to get on a plane and bring $42,000 to Utah, to meet her in Utah. And she promised me $1 million in return.
Yeah, right.
That what was going on was that she had money tied up, that she had a huge estate, big accounts in Europe, and that she needed to get the money here to the States, but Homeland Security was holding it until she paid some taxes on it. So if I could get her the $42,000, that would free up her millions of dollars, and she'd give me $1 million. To do it. And so I knew the whole time it was some kind of scam.
Sure.
But listening to her, it wasn't just, she was not putting a lot of effort into trying to get me to give her the money.
Right.
She was talking about that. Mm-hmm. But the bigger thing was she was trying to get me to give her advice on how she could basically screw the Department of Homeland Security, how she could commit fraud. And she's a con artist. So a con artist, what they're after is financial reward. But what she was trying to get me to do was to cooperate, to give my verbal consent or advice or counsel on how she can do this. And this woman had done a huge amount of background research on me. I've never spoken. I had no idea who she was. But she had gotten hold of my private cell phone number, which is unlisted, that she knew all about me. She knew about my family. She had done some kind of big background research on me. And I asked her about it. She told me that her team in Europe had collected it for her, which, you know, I didn't believe necessarily either. But I got off that call thinking she was trying to set me up. This call wasn't about trying to get my money. It was trying to get me to cooperate with what she was doing, trying to get me to give any word of approval, because that's a pretty big deal. That's a big violation of federal law to defraud the U.S. government. So I decided best thing for me to do is to contact – I got researching her. And I found that this woman has been operating for years doing the same thing. She's not a U.S. citizen, but she was caught doing this to people in 2010, 2011, 2014, 2016, 2017. She's been arrested numerous times, and she has bilked people out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. I reviewed all these court documents. She's threatened people's lives. It's a big deal. And she's made tons and tons of money off this scheme, but she never ends up in jail.
So never even goes to jail.
Well, they'll pick her up. There's mug shots. I've got two mug shots of her where they pick her up and they book her. But they let her go.
Nothing sticks.
Which really made me think this woman has got some kind of protection. And she's not even an American citizen. They ought to deport her. But,
you know.
So go ahead.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm reeling here. All this information, you know, the news cycle, it moves so quickly. And, you know, you're talking about Stephen Paddock, and basically that's the shooter in Las Vegas, right?
Right.
And, you know, he was kind of would you qualify him or categorize him as the lone nut kind of gunman that they always try to say these people are?
Well, that's what they want it to look like. That's the story.
Right.
I'll tell you, I did a video with an analysis of some major discrepancies. I took the coroner's report that was a section of it was published in a preliminary report that the Vegas PD put out. And in this coroner's report, it states a number of things. It says that the corpse that they got from the room was 6'1" tall, brown eyes, and there were some other things. So what I did was I got hold of some records. First of all, I show pictures of the crime scene, and it does. And you zoom in, and the corpse does have one eye open. And it's brown. It is a brown eye. But I got records of Stephen Paddock from Alaska, where he had flown to. He went to Alaska a couple years in a row to go fishing up there, and he got a hunting fishing license. And you have to fill it out, including your kind of like a driver's license. They have you put in your eye color, your hair color, your height, just a description.
Sure.
Well, 2 years in a row, his licenses show that he has blue eyes, and they say that he is 6'4".
Really?
So when you look at pictures of Stephen Paddock, and there's several of them out there now,
mm-hmm.
every single photo, Stephen Paddock very clearly has blue eyes in every one. His brother Eric has blue eyes. His brother Bruce has blue eyes. It's a blue-eyed family. And yet the corpse that was in that room, you can see in the photo, it's brown eyes, and the coroner confirmed brown eyes. Not only that, you've got the corpse is 6'1", while Stephen Paddock was 6'4", recorded on multiple documents from years ago. There are moles on the neck of the corpse under the Adam's apple, there's two or three moles there that do not appear in any other pictures of Stephen Paddock on the internet that we can see. And the other thing that's very significant, you can look at the picture of this crime scene photo of the body. The earlobes are very, very clearly detached from his neck. People have a range of you know, earlobes are kind of in forensic science, criminal forensic and science. Earlobes are a big thing that you can look at. Everybody's earlobes are kind of like fingerprints. It's unique to each individual. Well, you look at every single picture of Stephen Paddock that's out there, and he very clearly has attached earlobes. They attach right to his neck. There's no space there at all between his ear and where it connects to his upper neck. But the corpse in the crime scene photos, both ears very clearly have detached earlobes.
So you were saying that Stephen Paddock was visiting a military contractor named Doug Haig?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he works for a military contractor company. Doug Haig was what the media found when they were suing the Las Vegas police, trying to get the police to open up the files, documents. What the police attorney told the court was, we can't do this. We can't release these files yet because there's another person, another suspect that we're investigating. Mm-hmm. And if we release these files, it'll jeopardize our investigation. Mm. So the judge went and talked to the attorneys in chambers privately because she wanted to know, you know, what is this about? Because we don't want to the public does have, there is real public interest here. Files do need to be released, but we don't want to jeopardize an investigation. So what she ultimately ordered was the release of a whole bunch of search warrant applications that the police had filed, but she ordered that the names be redacted. Well, the clerk that redacted them screwed up and missed the name one time. And so they inadvertently gave to the media outlets all these papers, 81 pages of information, but the name was in it, and it was this man named Douglas Haig, and he has since come out. He did a press conference and everything because once his name was out there, it was, you know, he had to. So what his position is that yes, he did sell a lot of ammunition to Stephen Paddock. But he had no idea at all that Stephen Paddock was some crazy guy that he was going to go do shooting or anything like that. And he says he's innocent of any wrongdoing. He's just a guy who works 9 to 5 and has a side business selling ammunition, you know, all above board legit. But the day of his press conference, right after the press conference, the FBI came and picked him up.
Oh boy.
So I think they want to they want to shut this guy down, get him gagged. And, so he doesn't talk because they don't want people figuring out these connections. They don't want people figuring out that Stephen Paddock was part of something, that he was doing work with, for one of these agencies. It was either the FBI, the ATF, or the DEA that he would have been doing this work for. And
you know, I don't know if you feel this way. You probably don't. Looks like you're you're up to your neck in this stuff. But sometimes I feel like I don't even want to know all the horrible stuff that is going on. I'm seriously. I'm my mind is reeling from the FISA memo, which I want to talk about a little bit tonight. And then we got to talk about Saudi Arabia and what's going on there. And oh, the Stephen Paddock stuff. I mean, this is a mess. It's a cesspool. It's just, whoa.
Go ahead. I'll say one last thing about this about this Stephen Paddock stuff. So after this German had called me and all this weird phone call and everything, I immediately thought this is probably the FBI trying to set me up because they want to be able to get in here and get my files and whatever, because they know that I know stuff. So I put out a video saying I think the FBI is behind this. And you know what happened? The FBI called me and said that they wanted to come to my home and have me turn over this. What I did was I recorded the phone call between me and this German. Utah is a one-party consent state. They're wiretap laws. And so is North Carolina, where I live. So it's perfectly legal as long as one or the other party knows that it's being recorded. And since I knew it was being recorded, it's legal. So I didn't do anything illegal in recording it.
Oh.
But they said that they wanted to come get my my recording, and that they were going to send agents out to my house. And that was supposed to take place today.
Oh, goodness.
Well, I had spoken previously after this German had called me. I knew she was, at the very least, it was some kind of terrible Ponzi scheme. And, you know, she's a crook.
Yeah.
So I called the Utah Department of Commerce because they're the ones who all along have tried to go after her in court. So I made a report and they said, oh, yeah, we know all about her. We've actually got a couple different investigations going right now. And I said, what's the deal? Why doesn't anything ever stick? And he wouldn't tell me why, but there was something there. And he said, well, someone from the Department of Commerce would call me back in a couple of days. But it was just a couple hours after that that the FBI contacted me saying they wanted it. And I said, wait a second, what's the what's the story here? This is being handled by this, you know, Utah state government. What's the FBI's interest in this? And basically said, oh, yeah, well, we've got interest in it, too, which confirms what I was worried about, that they really are in on this in some way. So today I did contact the FBI back after speaking with my attorney, saying that, no, I'm not going to hand it over to them, at least not at this point.
Wow, do you want to be involved at this level? I mean, this is getting critical.
Well, it makes you step back and ask yourself, how deep do I want to be in this?
Sure. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How will it, like, let's say Stephen Paddock was involved with something really bad with the government. I mean, is it going to benefit you to know that, or benefit you to turn that over? What I'm saying is there's a plethora of just absolute horrible corruption everywhere. I mean, this is just one part of it, right? I mean, what are your thoughts?
No, trust me, Mark. I asked myself that. That there is a line, and I know where my line is. There is a line that I won't cross, because I'm 44 years old. I've got got a wife who I love to death. I've got kids. My youngest kid is, quite young. And
yeah,
I don't want to go. I don't want to get stuck in a cage.
Sure.
By the government and be that's really not my preference. So there is a point, but at the same time, I have done absolutely nothing wrong.
Well,
all I'm
course.
Doing as a journalist is trying to get the information out to the public. And I've talked to so many people who have been impacted by the Las Vegas shooting. If the United States government had some role, whether intentional or not, they have a right to know. I don't know if you know this, there were 83 children who had one or more parent get killed in that Vegas shooting. 83
horrible.
Kids.
That's horrible.
Who they are probably going to bed every night, wetting their pillows with their tears, wondering what in the world happened. And so many people, when you add in all the people who are friends of the people that have been shot or associated with them at work or some other way, this is a mass tragedy that has affected so many people across the country. I mean, I get every single day I'm bombarded with emails and text messages and phone calls from people who say, please don't stop. Keep going. We need to know what happened. People need this. They need to know. So I do have a passion for continuing and pushing and trying to get the truth out. But there's also my own family that I have to be concerned about. So I'm constantly weighing these two things, my personal safety with trying to help get the truth out. And it's really a scary thing. I'm telling you, Mark, I grew up so in love with America, and I still am. But this government of ours is so bloated and so unaccountable and so monolithic, it has become the big brother of George Orwell's 1984. And I've always known that. I've always heard it. I'm into this kind of stuff. But now that I'm wrapped up in the middle of it and seeing the lengths they go to shut people up just for trying to find out what the truth is, if there really is government involvement in something, even if they never meant for anything bad to happen, maybe they're just really out there trying to get drug dealers and cartels or whatever, and Stephen Paddock was working for them as a courier or something. Even if they only had nothing but good intentions, something went bad, and the public deserves to know if the government had some connection to Stephen Paddock. But after Fast and Furious, that dealt them such a black eye. I mean, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, got in really hot water. The U.S. Congress almost went after him pretty hard. And they're the ones, it took an act of Congress to shut down Fast and Furious and told them, don't do that anymore. So if they're still doing this, and after Fast and Furious, if they have a debacle like Las Vegas, if that can be tied to them, the American public is going to be so outraged. They're going to go after these agencies. They're going to lose, the agencies will lose total confidence. And so I believe that's why they're circling wagons. They're trying as hard as they can to cover this thing up and keep the media and citizens like me and you from finding out what happened.
It's, I've just kind of stayed away from this whole Stephen Paddock thing. I have a feeling he probably didn't even do the shooting. It's just, I mean, I don't know. I could be completely wrong on that. But he almost feels like he's the public face that they want everyone to see, but that the story's really much bigger. And I don't know. I could be completely all wet on all that. But
No, I agree with you. I have serious doubts. I started out, when I started this investigation back in October, it was my belief that Stephen Paddock probably was the guy that pulled the trigger. That I believe that there may have been more shooters involved, but yeah, that he was probably one of them. Mm-hmm. But this information, and I just got, I had someone helping me with the investigation who contacted, I won't say what state, but contacted the chief coroner's offices of a few different major cities and asked them about some of these anomalies, like in the crime color scene photos, like, the detached earlobes. Mm-hmm. And he asked them some things. And every single question from these coroner, or every single answer, came back basically saying that there's just no way that post-mortem your ears are going to curl up and detach from your head, or that you're going to have blue eyes change to brown. Mm-hmm. So This is incredible intrigue. Plus, these crime scene photos, these are not official photos, the first ones that came out. Someone that was part of that original strike team that went in, it was a SWAT officer named Levi Hancock, and there were four other kind of a random assortment of law enforcement that showed up. They were the first strike team to go in, and one of them, and I believe I know which one did it, saw something that upset them enough that they took pictures on their own cell phone and they leaked it to the press. Those original crime scene photos were not supposed to have been given to the public.
Hmm.
But thank goodness they were leaked, because otherwise we would have absolutely no reason whatsoever to doubt the official story, at least not based on you know, the crime scene. But that crime scene is not right. There's so many things wrong with it.
There is so much going on right now. There's so many corruption from so many different areas. I want to shift gears. I mean, we could talk about the rest of that all night, I know, but
yeah.
Let me shift gears, because the news cycle moves so quickly and we go from, you know, one major story to the next. And I'm still, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at this yet, but I'm trying to get my mind wrapped around the FISA court memo. And I guess the FISA court was lied to by the DNC and maybe even the FBI, I don't know. And they wanted to have the surveillance on Carter Page, who was just another Trump aide, I think. And I know that's probably a bit of an oversimplification, but my understanding is there basically turned out to be no connections between this Carter Page and the Russian government whatsoever. So does that mean the DNC and the FBI have been lying to that FISA court?
Oh, yeah, they totally that. Well, the main thing is they omitted significant evidence, significant information to the FISA court. Basically what happened is this. You got this crazy guy, Donald Trump, that Hillary Clinton just hates, and they want to take him down any way they can.
Exactly.
And so they paid for basically opposition research, which by itself is no big deal. All federal level candidates do it. But they paid for a dossier that was based on the work of Christopher Steele, who is kind of a former MI6, former British spy.
I see.
Okay. Christopher Steele fabricated most of the stuff in that.
Oh boy!
And some of it was just blatantly outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
For example, saying that Donald Trump had traveled to Russia, and while there, he stayed at the same hotel that Barack and Michelle Obama had stayed at. And out of his hatred for the Obamas, he hired a couple of prostitutes and had them urinate on the bed.
Oh, yeah, that whole story. That's the weirdest story.
Well, that's all this dossier. Well, they took this information that was paid for by the Clinton campaign, they took this, and it was the key piece of information that was taken to the FISA court to say, look, there is definitely significant Russian collusion, and based on this, we need that warrant. So they knew it was untrue, and so what happens is they end up having the Department of Justice gets involved, specifically the FBI, and you've got people working for the FBI who previously had been in charge of the Clinton email scandal, which mm-hmm. was a real crime. They helped to shut down the Clinton email inquiry, but then turned around and were put in charge of the Trump investigation with Robert Mueller, the former FBI chief who was put in charge of the Russiagate investigation. So you've got these very pro-Hillary Clinton FBI agents, top brass. One was an attorney, one was second in command of this counterintelligence division, who, by the way, were secretly having an affair with each other.
Say what?
That's what all these text messages are about. It's between these two people that were having an affair, and their phone text messages back and forth reveal that they had it out for Trump, that they hated him, that they were talking about impeachment on like day one, literally the day that he was elected, they were already talking about impeachment. And so they end up on this Russiagate probe, and they went after him. And this guy is one of the ones that was really pushing this fake dossier to the FISA court to justify getting the warrant on Carter Page, knowing that it was not true. So what it comes down to is you've got crooked people who are extremely partisan.
extremely
partisan, using their powers to basically overthrow the constitutional protections against unreasonable search and wiretap laws and everything, using this as justification to get the FISA warrant. And FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act or authorization.
Yeah. Thanks for defining that. So
it's just a huge, huge mess.
I have a feeling that despite this blatant corruption, and I hope I'm wrong. I really hope that I'm wrong about this. A lot of times I say that I hope I'm wrong. I have the feeling that not much is going to happen because of the FISA memo. Do you think I'm wrong?
I hope something happens, but as far as anything significant long term, no, definitely not. It's the swamp. It's a bureaucracy that is designed to protect itself, and they're just not. There's not going to be any. You may have a couple people fired, but there's not going to be any significant changes. It's just too big. People. It's too entrenched.
They may find some low level people to.
Yeah,
that's all they'll do.
Yeah, there will be a couple scalps, but nothing of significance is going to happen to shut this down.
And you know what's interesting is I think that most Democrats, most people on the left, won't even bother to look into this or won't even care about the fact that it's so completely absurd and corrupt.
No, as long as it's against the Republicans or Trump, the folks on the left are just going to say, whatever, I don't see the big deal. But, you know, I would think that if the roles were reversed, it would probably be working the same way. I think there would probably be quite a few people on the right saying, we'll look the other way. As long as we get Hillary out of office, you know, who cares about the tactics? But, you know, that's not good for either side.
No.
And so while I didn't personally vote for Trump, when it comes to this Russiagate scandal, I do defend him. Because he was not involved in the kind of Russian collusion that they talk about. Certainly didn't collude with Vladimir Putin to throw the election. That's just so absurd. You don't even hear people talk about it anymore because it's just, it makes you dumber just to say it. Your IQ drops a couple points just to say it as if it's true.
It's the first time I've ever seen on the media a psyop that's so blatantly wrong get repeated over and over and over again. It's disturbing to me just because of that reason.
You're exactly right, Mark. That's what this is. It's a psyop. It's a psyop that is being used to justify a soft coup. And I don't consider it to be just like an attack on Donald Trump. The reason I feel so strongly about it is the American people, like it or not, the American people voted and chose Donald Trump as president. You know, they may not like that it was through the electoral vote and the system instead of the direct vote,
right,
but still through our current system that has been here since the nation was founded, Donald Trump is the legitimately elected president of the United States. And it harms all of us as Americans if we tolerate something like a coup against the presidency using a massive psyop. Much of it is being carried out and perpetuated by our own intelligence communities. The FBI is foremost doing this.
You know,
and that's why you see them in the headlines all the time that the FBI this and...
Low
morale in the FBI, but
it would be one thing if it was well put together and very ingenious and clever and logical and still false. But this is like ridiculous, absurd, has no basis whatsoever. It's insultingly stupid. And they keep saying it over and over again. And it's a weird psyop against the American people. I think what they may be trying to do is demonize Russia to the point where we'll accept a war with Russia or something insane like that. I don't know what they're doing. It's so weird.
Yeah, well, they've definitely had it out for Russia for a while now, and Hillary really was pushing that hard back in the presidential debates. Every single question she was asked on foreign policy, somehow she tied it back to how we need to stand up to Vladimir Putin. And the big thing, she was, I guess a lot of people watching the debates didn't really understand the language, but she was calling for war.
Yes.
What she proposed in the debates was establishing a no-fly zone over Syria. That's what she kept calling for. What was happening at the time was that Russia, by the invitation of Syria's government, Russia's Air Force was very, very actively fighting against ISIS there in Syria. Oh, yeah. So by proposing a no-fly zone, what that means is that the United States would enforce a no-fly zone. And that means they would shoot down Russian jets.
Yes.
That's what Hillary Clinton was saying in the debates. I propose shooting down Russian jets.
It's so insane. It's so absurd. It's beyond insane. You know, it's just ridiculous. Have you tried to talk to somebody like Alex Jones yet, or tried to hook up with him? You have a lot of interesting information.
Yeah, I have. No, I'm not good about reaching out to... I have this thing. I'm not good at self-promotion or reaching out and trying to get my stuff out. If someone comes to me and says, hey, you want to do a show, then I almost always say yes.
Hmm.
But as far as me contacting others, I probably should do it, Mark, try and reach out and get this stuff out. But I just publish it on my YouTube channel, and it gets disseminated here and there, and
you let the cards fall where they fall.
Yeah.
And that way you get a break sometimes. And if it stays a little quieter, then you stay alive and you don't have to get in a lot of trouble. I can totally understand that. So I know we don't have a lot of time left. So what about this whole Saudi Arabia thing? Didn't we have some Saudi crown prince? Was it Mohammed bin Salam or something like that that started an anti-corruption campaign? Is that correct or totally false?
Yeah, he called it anti-corruption, but that's not what it was. It was just an effort to consolidate power around himself.
So he was actually killing people who were against him.
It's
that obvious. It's more that kind of thing.
See, the older generations that make up the New World Order, people like George H.W. Bush and his generation of people, they, over their decades, had put a lot of effort into making connections in Saudi Arabia and getting sweet deals for their oil companies, Dick Cheney and others, getting all these great deals, and they did it through the Saudi royal family, which is basically just, it's no different from an Italian mafia. That's what the Saudi royal family is it's a mafia. Well, what they did was they got this family, it's a big family, so there's segments of the family that they got into power. And so you've got princes like this guy, Prince Al-Walid, all these different people, and they got them into power, and the CIA helped to move them up into the higher ranks, making deals with them.
Wasn't that Al bin Wahid? Wasn't he like? Didn't he own part of Fox News for a while?
Prince Al-Walid. Yeah, he owns a sizable stake in Citigroup. Also, he owns. He co-owns the top floors of the Mandalay Bay are actually a separate hotel called the Four Seasons. It's kind of like an elite hotel.
Yeah.
And he co-owns that with Bill Gates. He's into media publishing. He's a billionaire. He's one of the richest men in the world.
He wasn't killed, was he?
No, but he was tortured.
He was tortured? Are you serious?
Yeah.
So what happened
was the king of Saudi Arabia is this old guy. He's starting to develop dementia. his son is named Prince Salman.
Oh, yes.
And Prince Salman was not the crown prince. He was a prince, but he was not next in line to the throne. Mm-hmm. Someone else was. So what Salman did was he worked and he got that guy removed as the crown prince, got his dad to put him in as crown prince. And he's basically, he's not a dictator, I guess, but he's the Secretary of Defense. He's their Secretary of Commerce. He basically is like, you know, we have the president and then the president's administration. Well, he's like the secretary of almost every department in Saudi Arabia. So he's got almost universal power. But because there are other princes who don't like what he's doing and don't like his agenda, they were a threat to him. And so what he did was he accused all of them of being corrupt, including this Prince Al-Walid, and he rounded them all up. There was one that was killed. He had one of the princes' helicopter shot down and killed him. Jeez. But he arrested a bunch of them, and he kept them hostage in instead of putting them in a prison, he kept them in a Ritz-Carlton in a room. They all slept on the floor. And Prince Al-Walid is one of them. And what he told Prince, and people can verify this, they look it up on the internet. The Prime Minister or Foreign Minister of Lebanon leaked it that Crown Prince Salman had hired, that he was keeping these princes and he was having them tortured by contract mercenaries. And they were formerly of Blackwater. Blackwater no longer exists, or it does, but by a different name. So they were using American mercenaries to torture these princes into making concessions and agreements. And Prince Al-Walid was one of them. They said that they were actually taking these men, and one of the things they did with some of them was they hung them upside down with their shirts off, and they were smacking them and punching them in the face and just, you know, little things.
Yeah.
But anyway, this Prince Al-Walid, Salman held him and told him basically, give me half your wealth and I'll let you go. And so this was big news for a long time, kept showing up in the headlines because Al-Walid was holding out saying, no, I'm not going to do it. But they finally, I guess he finally gave in. And I forget how many billions of dollars he agreed to turn over to Prince Salman. Jeez. As like a penalty for his corruption. But he did. It was something like $6 billion or $8 billion that he said he would turn over in exchange for his freedom. And that's where things are at right now.
So it's just like gangsters.
Yeah, these are gangsters.
My gosh.
And the American government loves them.
They do. You know, my mind kind of shifted to another topic quickly. I know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Do you think, now this is going to sound strange because it's a jump, but you were talking about old people in the New World Order, and you talked about Bush Senior, I think you mentioned just briefly.
Yeah.
That made me think of Hitler. Do you think Hitler escaped to Argentina after World War II?
You know, I've watched some documentaries talking about that, mm-hmm. and I think there's a very good chance.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about it to be well spoken on it, but I felt at first that it sounded like a stupid idea, but then I watched some of the documentaries where they present the evidence, and I can't say I've got my mind made up because I don't know it well enough, but there is a very good case to be made, a very good case.
Did you see the big deal with Elon Musk yesterday and the rocket? What do they call it? Shoot. This is straight off the top of my head. It's one of his huge payload rockets that he's working on. It's the Falcon Heavy, I think they're calling it. It's uh-huh. this giant rocket that has two boosters on each side. And what was amazing about this is this gigantic rocket fired, and they took it up you know, to low Earth orbit, the two boosters separated. This is amazing. The two big boosters separated from the main rocket, and they proceeded back to Earth and landed. If you can imagine such a thing.
The booster rockets landed?
They landed. They had tripods that came out.
Huh.
And they landed. So these are completely reusable. Now, wow. I forget what happened to the center section. But this is a huge, huge breakthrough in space.
Wow.
So the world is on the very verge of changing. Because space travel is going to become at least practical to large companies at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look for that. Look for that on YouTube.
I'll look for that. I was yesterday dealing with the FBI stuff. I didn't look at the news at all. The world could have ended yesterday and I would have been the last to find out, but yeah, that's very interesting topic.
It's astonishing. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing when you see this, because I watched this kind of thing when they were still failing at it and they were blowing rockets up, but they actually got it to work. Now, this leads to a whole nother discussion, which we don't have time for, but he claims that he thinks he can go to Mars.
Huh. Now,
the question is, can he? Is this a psyop? Because I have I don't know if you've studied the moon landings at all, but we're at a very, very strange point in history because, you know, we haven't really done any space exploration. If we did go to the moon, that's been 50 years ago now almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that kind of absurd?
Yeah, it's very strange.
You know, we are in a weird, weird time.
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, I'll tell you something that if you've not seen it, Mark, that you might enjoy. There's a channel on YouTube. The channel name is Crow777.
Crow777.
And this is an amateur astronomer, I guess. But he has got some fascinating footage where he's used his video on his telescope to record what is very clearly some kind of flying objects up over the surface of the moon. He calls them shadow ships, but yeah, look up Crow777 shadow ships and watch that footage, and it will blow your mind. There is something up there.
That's right up my alley. I of course, with exopolitics, that's the kind of thing I study all the time. But I will take a look at that. Jake, be careful, man. Don't get yourself killed.
Yeah, I'm less worried about dying as I am being charged with some kind of who knows what for revealing information, federal secrets or something. That's what I got to be careful with.
Oh, I know. It's a very weird situation that we're in now because the corruption's just so overwhelming. It's everywhere. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what I feel like. I feel like, have you seen the movie The Matrix?
Oh, yeah.
So there's the, everyone wants to think that they're, you know, like the Neo type where you take the red pill and you wake up and you see the world as it is and you just accept that's how it is. But sometimes I think, wouldn't it be nice after seeing what I've seen to be able to take that blue pill and go back to sleep and pretend like I never saw what it's really like? To go back to a state of blissful ignorance and just rejoin the vast majority of people who don't know what's really out there.
You know, what I keep finding is that I experience cognitive dissonance internally when I'm I realize that I have two opinions that actually are in conflict with one another, which I didn't realize. And a lot of this goes on subconsciously, because I think my subconscious mind and my unconscious is figuring this stuff out before the conscious mind it really can handle it. So I experience the cognitive dissonance at a subconscious level, and it takes my conscious mind a while to catch up.
Yeah.
And I understand what you're saying, because what happens is, as we're re-educating ourselves, we have to let go of some things that we really had some maybe fond notions about. And yeah, it's hard to let those things go, is what I'm saying. But
yeah,
I've never been dis... how can I say this? I think the truth eventually becomes a very great reward, even if it requires us to lose our naivety about some things.
Yeah.
At least I'm saying that now. I don't know if I'll say that in a month, but but anyway, yes. Yeah, they're very, very interesting things. That whole thing with Stephen Paddock, for some reason, I would let that go. It's just my personal opinion. Now, you have to, of course, make your own mind up on that one.
Yeah.
But I just don't see that benefiting you very much. Have you read anything on Cody Snodgrass yet?
Oh, what did I read on Cody Snodgrass since? Oh, I can't remember, Mark. It's been probably a month ago.
Do you interview people like that?
I don't really do many interviews of other people for my show. I do tons of interviews as like background research and interviewing witnesses, but you don't
put the interview on per se.
Right. I should probably add that in as part of my channel is doing interviews with interesting people like that.
That would be a good one. I'd really like to hear you two talk. It would be very, very interesting.
Yeah. You had mentioned
too intense for me, in many ways, because, the corruption, you know, I just, it's not my favorite thing to deal with the political corruption. It's just too much like, I don't know, fecal matter or whatever. I just can't. It's just not my deal. It's like gargling sewage, someone said.
Yeah. So
it's very, very difficult.
It's why I didn't, early on in my early 20s, my goal was to just dive straight into politics. My goal was to get into federal politics. And I started out as a political operative. I worked for a bunch of campaigns for presidential candidates, and I was good at it. I was a campaign manager for a bunch of candidates, but I quickly learned that when it gets competitive, it gets dirty. Yeah. And I knew how to win. I knew the dirty tactics you use, but that's just not, to me, winning wasn't worth compromise, you know, going to bed at night feeling like, man, I said some dishonest things to help my candidate today. That just was never something I could do. And so I got out of it. And that's how I feel about politics today. I love watching it. To me, it's like watching a good, I don't know, football game or boxing match. That's what I like, but I just can't do the work. You have to compromise your integrity to get into a lot of that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you shed some light on the Saudi Arabia thing, because I did not realize at what level where they were torturing that Al-Wahid, because Al-Wahid, I can't even pronounce his name correctly, but I mean, that guy was one of the most powerful men in the world.
It's incredible. Yeah, it'd be like if Jared Kushner here in the United States took Bill Gates and kept him prisoner and tortured him.
Exactly. It's so absurd. It's so absurd.
Give me half your money, Bill Gates, and I'll let you go.
My goodness. And he got away with it. so far until someone shoots him
in
the middle of the night. And
Prince Salman, I can't imagine, is going to have a very long life with as hardcore as he is and the enemies he's already made.
And you know, someone I read somewhere that we don't really have a civilized society. It's just a thin veneer that goes away from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm dissatisfied with the fascination, the public's fascination with things like UFC blood sport. I remember now it's so common, the cage fighting and stuff like that, that people don't think anything about it. But when it first came out, it was like underground, it was graphic and brutal and people beating each other with almost no padding on at all. And now it's just like, they've got like UFC stuff for kids. It's crazy. We're so desensitized.
I have to watch myself to make sure I don't, because I gravitate towards some of that stuff. And I think it really, it disturbs you on a deep level in your psyche. And I think the society is being intentionally polluted this way.
Yeah.
At least that's my take on it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Man, I don't want to hold you up. Thank you for another great show. I'll get this posted, and keep up the good work. And, man, be mellow and be safe.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Jake. We'll see you later, buddy. Have a good
evening. All right, Mike. Mark, take care.
Bye-bye.